everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Saturday saw the Tide roll over an outmanned squad from North Texas, 41-0. In more ways than one, this game was a sign of things to come. Tom, which mean green tea leaves caught your eye?
It would have to be the play of A.J. McCarron to start off the game. I mean, this guy must have gained a lot of confidence from being tabbed the guy in Penn State and pretty much playing the whole way, because we came out throwing the ball, which surprised me, but out of his first 12 passes, 9 of them were for first downs right out of the gate.
Yeah, McCarron came out hot, and he came out flinging the ball, and I was really impressed with Smelly's first catch and some of the aggressiveness that he showed next to the sideline. That's something that we've not seen, but I'm looking at this a little different, and I don't mean to necessarily be pessimistic after we put up 41 points and almost 600 total yards of offense. I feel like I'm almost picking on, Cindy Crawford's mole or Megan Fox's thumbs or something. I'm a little disappointed in how the offense performed. We were ineffective early. We had 3 opportunities in the red zone in the first half. We went for field goals. We missed 2 field goals. And the offensive line, we were just shuffling people on the offensive line. Very disappointed in what I saw there.
Well, I guess what I meant by McCarron, to go back to this for a quick second, is – when we had McElroy, we didn't have anybody with a quick release. We didn't have anybody with some strength on his arm. We also talked about with McElroy that he didn't hit guys in stride. And one of the things that jumped out at me with McCarron is McElwain called a great game plan out of the box from the standpoint of quick, short passes. I'm not going to let him sit back there and have too much pressure on my offensive line. But there was a lot of misdirection. He'd fake an end around to Mays and then turn around and throw it to Christian Jones in the flat, and he'd hit him quick before anybody could get to him and he could get 15 yards. And so I just liked how, he threw it to 8 different guys. He was distributing the ball. And the fact that he threw 9 of his first 12 passes for first downs tells me that Saban has a lot of confidence in the quarterback position.
Look, I'm not mad at McCarron. And in fact, I think the play calling was good. And I think that, something we've not seen a whole lot of in recent years is using our play calling to mask a weakness. And I just think across the offensive line, I just continue to be disappointed in what we're seeing. We finished the game with 347 net rushing yards, but we had 76 rushing yards at half. Poor Barrett Jones had to play 3 positions across the offensive line, and we actually yanked DJ Fluker from the game for his ineffective play.
I was looking back at that because I was really curious about where he came in, because Saban talked about after the game that they were shuffling players around to try to get certain players in the game when Phillip Sims got some snaps. And when I went back and looked at it, I was actually surprised. Fluker came out in the 3rd series. But then he came right back in the 4th series due to the, injury to Vallejos that was short term. But, when you talk about the ineffectiveness of the offense, just like in the Penn State game, McCarron was in there for 3 series before turning it over to Sims. And he put up points all 3 times. Granted, it'd be great to score every time that you get down the field. But, when Sims came in the game again, it was 17-0. And then when McCarron got back in the game, he put more points on the board. And so I think he showed some good leadership. I did see Fluker came back quicker than I thought. And so it looked to me like Cyrus and Fluker played a lot more of that game than I thought he did when I first looked at it.
Well, Fluker came back so quickly because Vallejos got dinged up, and poor Barrett had to go to his third position of the game at center. And as soon as you know that happened, Fluker came back in. I'm going to tell you what I think that we've completely overthought. We've overthought the room on the offensive line. We brought in Cyrus at left tackle, and that led us to believe that we had to move Barrett over to kind of be his buddy and sit down Chance Warmack. That left Steen at right guard next to Fluker.
Right.
And we're seeing most of our issues, and I hate to kind of pick on anybody, but we're seeing most of our issues on the right side of the line with Steen and with Fluker. And
well,
we saw
I will say though, I even went back and looked at the distribution of the plays and how we had done plays, because I still think our issue is in the middle, because when I went back and looked at our plays, we actually had a pretty good distribution between running and passing. We're about 50-50. But surprisingly, I was shocked that we only had 3 runs up the middle. Out of 33 carries, we only had 3 runs up the middle. Now, my point of saying that is that when Fluker was in the game at right tackle, he made some holes around the right end, just like Barrett Jones did. I really think our weakness is still more Steen than it is Fluker.
Well, guess what? Fluker's the one that sat down. And the fact that we were running to the edges, we've been calling for that all season long. And that's where I'll say again, where the play calling, we used our play calling to help a weakness, and the weakness is the offensive line. Let me say this. I think we've completely overthought the situation on the offensive line.
From what perspective?
Barrett Jones has played 4 of the 5 offensive positions, and ironically, irony always wins. The only position he's not played is right guard, which is where he has started the last 2 years. For some reason, we thought that he had to go over and be buddies with Cyrus and kind of coach him along like he did with Fluker. What we need to do is bring him back to right guard, sit Steen. He can continue to help Fluker, and then Fluker can be every bit as productive as he was last year.
Right.
Keep Chance Warmack without him sort of juggling back and forth. I think
right.
he's going to get his confidence back.
Right.
And if he plays like he did last year, we're going to be good. And then Cyrus will have to take his lumps. But he's an athletic phenom with great feet.
Yeah.
I think he'll take his lumps pretty well. And guess what? Tight end. Put a tight end over there and to help him out.
Well,
I think that'll stabilize the offensive line.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I think that's going to evolve. I think it's possible that Cyrus could, continue to get more and more playing time. It'll be interesting to see how they line up for Arkansas, because, SEC schedule is upon us. And so, I mean, that I've told you that Steen was the number 6 guy, in my opinion. Now, I will say, to be fair to Steen, Steen played better in this game than he had played in the first 2. And the reason I mention that is we do have to remember that was his 3rd start. Okay? I guess that's not true. He started a couple games last year whenever there was injuries. But he's
had about 5 or 6 starts.
Yeah, 5 or 6 starts. And so, because I have given him so much grief, I do think that he played better. I saw one thing when I went back in the highlights. There was a play in the 2nd quarter late with McCarron where a guy came in on the outside right edge and Steen clipped him. And by Steen running out there and being aware and clipping him, McCarron hits Kenny Bell for a 25-yard gain. So I like Steen. I guess what I'm saying is right now I don't know if Cyrus is ready to be the guy, more so than I don't know if he's ready to be in there more than Steen is ready to stay in there. But I think Steen could probably be the odd man out by the time the end of the season's there.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need to put Barrett back at the right guard and then just let Cyrus take his lumps. We can put an H back. We can put a tight end. We can use our play calling to go,
right.
away from that side. And it's a combination of those things we can help Cyrus out. And plus, like I said, he's just a phenom. I think that he's going to be okay if we just let him out there and let him plant some roots and develop and grow as a player. And then stop just kind of screwing around with Barrett, because he's going to make mistakes when he has to, from series to series, he has to determine, am I playing right-handed? Am I playing left-handed? Am I playing inside? Am I playing outside?
Right.
That's right. I don't care how good he is. That's not, at some level, that's just not fair to him.
Well, let me ask you this, just to jump to some other topics here. What did you think about playing McCarron 3 series and then Sims 2 series and making that mixture? Because part of me says, I mean, I wonder if we see that in Arkansas. Because part of me says that McCarron did have some momentum. And when I went back and watched the game, when he came back in after he had sat out for those two series, he wasn't as sharp early on in that next series for him. It took him a little bit to get back into the game.
I don't think that we're going to see the rotation against Arkansas like we did against, you know, Kent State or against North Texas. What's that?
It'll be more like the Penn State rotation is what you think.
Well, absolutely. I think Arkansas will be a tougher, potentially a tougher opponent than Penn State. And they're subject to putting up more points more quickly than like a Penn State. And so I think that if we do see Sims, it'll be in the fourth quarter with one of the two teams having a pretty commanding lead.
Let me ask you this. What did you think of the play of, he's talked about explosive players on offense and not really having them. I thought it was interesting that we started out the game with heavy Mays, and most of Mays's production came on those first few plays. But I was very impressed with the play of Kenny Bell. You and I talked during the game of maybe he's kind of jumped ahead of DeAndre White, but I think him and Chris John Jones has given us some across the middle speed and given us some yards after the catch that we haven't been seeing for a few games.
Yeah, speaking of those two guys, you know, Kenny Bell was the leading receiver with 55 yards, four catches, and Christian Jones, true freshman here, he had the highest yard per catch. He had two catches for 41 yards, and so he was racking up some big gains. And
yeah, one of them had 25 yards, and one of them had 30 for their longs. That's what I was saying. I mean, how awesome that they both had plays of over 25 yards.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's some explosiveness there. I don't know really what's happened to DeAndrew after the first week and after his fall camp. You know, he had one catch for 5 yards and did not start the game again. Now, he came in before, the 15-minute mark like he did in the Penn State game. But he did not start, and he did not come in until at least the third series. So I don't know what his situation is. He's going to have to work his way back into the rotation because he's as explosive, if not more explosive, than anyone on the team.
Well, he's done something, as you and I know, and we don't know what it is. But whatever he's done, I think it's affected him mentally a little bit because even when he came in the Penn State game, he wasn't a target of a single reception. And so how you go from making a big splash in week one to not even being a target in game two and only having one catch in game three. So hopefully he can definitely rebound from that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. Hey, I'm going to be a little pessimistic again, and I kind of talked about this early on. You know, the first play from the game, we threw the ball to Smelly, and he was lumbering down the sidelines, and he refused to go out of bounds. I mean, he lowered his shoulder and popped someone and, got that extra yard. And I think that's the first time I've seen any of our players do that this season. Eddie Lacy's a load, and he's got good feet, but he seems content to, at the end of his run, go out of bounds. He doesn't lower his shoulder and pop that DB. And he's a big running back, and so he ought to have some mustard in the tank to be able to do that. And Christian Jones, he's a freshman, and he's a smaller guy, but he seems content a couple times that I've seen to go out of bounds as well. I was just pleased to see somebody, sort of man up and lower the shoulder.
No, that's true. I think it goes back to our intro to the podcast when Nick Saban is screaming at those guys and saying, make their ass quit. That's our MO as a team. And I think with Ingram, I think Trent Richardson learned it from Mark Ingram. And so last year, they would punish you on the sideline, and it was like over time of that game, it just wore you down and wore you down and just affected you physically and mentally. And so I'm a little surprised that, that Lacy, for the power he does possess, having seen Ingram and Trent do that last year, I'm surprised he's not bringing that.
Yeah, I think so too. One thing that I observed that I thought was pretty funny, in the fourth quarter, two consecutive plays, not possessions, two consecutive plays, Phillip Jones hands off to Trent Richardson, and he runs 71 yards, which is his career long. On the very next play, he hands off to Eddie Lacy, who runs, I don't have the number in front of me, but he runs for about 50, 60 yards, which was his career long. Those are on successive plays.
Yeah, one was about 71 and one was 67.
Yep. 67.
Yep.
So about the time, and everybody's watching the ball, everybody's watching the running back, about the time I see that Eddie Lacy is bust through the
right.
second layer of the defense, I can immediately divert my attention back to Phil Sims, and he starts walking to the sideline. He knows it's a touchdown. He starts walking back to the sideline, and he just shrugs his shoulders and puts his hands up like, I hand the ball off good, don't I? Two consecutive plays racked up, 150 yards, two touchdowns. And I kind of kid, and I'm going to go on here for a second.
Okay.
I kind of kid a little bit because, his whole deal is about, I need possessions. I need to get possessions to show what I can do.
Right.
He wants the team to win. He wants us, everyone to perform well. And it's just kind of ironic that on two successive plays, he hands off for long touchdown runs.
No, that is because he already knows, like you said, that, this might be his last game for a few weeks' time. And he has to be frustrated. That has to be a mixed bag, for sure. What did you think real quick about those two big runs? Because as I was kind of looking at the plays, at that point, Barrett Jones was actually at right tackle whenever we had the run on the right side, and Vallejos was key. Him and Barrett Jones pulled on that play. And then whenever we had the big run to the left side, Barrett Jones had moved back to left tackle. But this time, Vallejos pulls to the left, and Warmack pulls. And on both Trent and Lacy's touchdown runs to the left end, it was Warmack and Vallejos. So I just find it interesting that the combination that we're working there is we're pulling our left guard with the center to the left, and we're pulling our right tackle and the center to the right.
Well, and I think it goes to, the play calling to maybe mask some weaknesses, get the linemen out in space against smaller guys. They're all aggressive and they're all physical. It's hell,
don't
more
you,
than anything.
Don't you think it shows some incredible play of Vallejos? I mean, for the center to be one of those key cogs, that's a long way to pull.
It's a long way to pull, and he's kind of short and got those stubbly legs, and he doesn't look like somebody that's going to get out there and run long sprints. But he gets out there and kind of clears that corner. And we talked about watching the Penn State game that why don't we just run up the middle? Why do we run up the middle? Why don't we run to the edges? And so pulling some players and getting out on that edge, it led to some very successful runs. And I want to be fair. I'm picking on the offensive line, but we had 347 net rushing yards. Trent finished with a buck 67. Eddie finished with a buck 68. All of those are career highs. Trent had three touchdowns, career high. Eddie had
right.
two touchdowns, career high. And
right.
get this, it's the first time ever in the history of University of Alabama football, it's the first time ever we've had two rushers run for over 150 yards. And so
that's amazing.
I was optimistic when I said last week, I want to see 300 yards rushing. I was more hopeful than anything. Well, it happened, and at the same time, I'm not pleased with our offensive line play. So,
well,
I guess
let me address that for a second and say that when you peel back those big runs, we still averaged 5 yards a carry. And the reason I make that distinction real quick is when we won the title in 2009, the key stat that jumped out to me is we averaged 5 yards a carry, and we held our opponents to 2.5 yards a carry. And I remember saying, man, what a difference. That's a 50% difference. And so when you peel back that, sure, we ran for 10 yards a carry in the game, when you take out those big runs, we still average 5 yards a carry.
Well, you have to go back and look at which ones you take out, because
I'm just taking out all the big runs. I'm taking all the four big runs that we had in the ball game.
Yeah, I saw somewhere, and I didn't reconcile, you know, the four that you're taking out versus what they took out. But I saw somewhere if you take out all the explosive runs, you know, it gets to like a 2.5 yard average. So,
we only had four, and so we had five. We had a 58, a 67, a 71, a 35, and a 43. I took all those out, and we still averaged 5 yards a carry.
No, that's fine. Alabama media, I don't necessarily trust them all, and I don't know what he took out of his numbers to sort of create the angle that he was going for. So
I got you. What else jumped out at you from the offensive side before we flipped to defense? Anything else?
I guess where's Duron Carter? And you know, it's almost I'm about to give up my search.
Well, you know, we talked that they had. People observing practice had noticed that when they broke out in their, they broke out of their into their group sessions on Tuesday and Wednesday, that Duron went with the receivers going to work the scout team.
Yeah,
he didn't go with those first five or six guys, and you would have to think if it doesn't happen pretty soon that it's going to have to be a redshirt, which I definitely didn't see coming.
Definitely didn't see that coming, but. You know, every new day is new information that you process into, the assessment. And so my assessment is rapidly changing to, you know, it looks like he's not going to show up, potentially is going to be a redshirt year. And I didn't see that coming, but, you know, new information justifies new decisions.
I got you. What caught your eye first on defense?
You know, I think on defense, what really caught my eye, maybe I'm just in a sour mood, but what really caught my eye is coming out of half. They come out of half. Apparently, they purposely deferred to take the ball in the second half. Apparently, they saw something on our defense. They came out flinging the ball, three straight passes, moved the ball very well down the field. They kind of self-destructed. They had to call a timeout, and then coming out of that timeout, and I kind of, was sharing with Bama Joe, who sits with us, and I said, you know what, that's going to be a costly timeout, because that's giving our players a chance to go back and get some chewing out from the coaching and getting lined up. Coming out of that
timeout.
Well, they used two timeouts on that drive, but coming out of that first timeout, they ran a flea flicker on reverse action, and I guarantee you that was the right play call, but they ran it at the wrong time coming out of a timeout. If they had run that those first three plays, then came out, across the 50, we're probably looking for a run at that point, and they run the flea flicker at that point, they probably score the touchdown.
Yep.
And so I think about, hey, they saw something on film, they put it now on film. And you got a team like Arkansas coming in next week who flings the ball all over the field. Don't think Petrino isn't going to see that and capitalize on that. So I'm a little bit concerned. And it was you think in the context of the game it was just a hiccup, but in the context of game planning, with a more skilled opponent, that's something we better shore up.
No, that excuse me, that's true. But definitely, like you said, the way I read that though is that they just had, we got to come out with something different. I might just not be reading enough into it, but I just kind of looked at it from the standpoint of, we're not getting anywhere running the ball. We're behind 20-0 coming into the second half and we got to try to open it up a little bit. So maybe I just didn't see it the same way.
Yeah. But they did, and they had success, and they were as effective on those three plays as they were the rest of the game. They just kind of shot themselves on the foot. They had to call that timeout, and I kind of kidded, that's an expensive timeout. Then they called the second timeout, and I kidded, you know what? They want to put points on the board here. They'll do anything to put points on the board right here. They'll burn all three of their timeouts right now if they have to, because they know they're not going to win. But let's get a moral victory against this Crimson Tide defense.
Well, to your point of that, obviously our long runs in the third quarter hurt our time of possession. But they ended up having the ball for 20 minutes in the second half. And they were 0 for 5 on third down conversions in the first half. They were 3 for 6 in the third quarter. So, yeah. Major improvement.
Yeah, they saw something. They adjusted. Now, in fairness, the game was largely over, and we did start to rotate a lot of backups. I think I saw where we ended up playing like 67 guys in the game in general, and a lot of those ended up being backups. And I want to give a shout-out to the reserves who led the goal line stand, kind of there in the fourth quarter. And Saban was really passionate as a couple of the young DBs were, kind of lined up out of position. I mean, he wandered all the way out, as they were, calling the cadence, to the hash marks, just yelling and pointing. And, guys were realigning themselves. And we held them out of the end zone, which I was very impressed with. We didn't do that against Penn State.
Well, let me ask you this. We talked during the game. We saw when the second string defensive guys came in, predominantly secondary guys, back seven. And we saw that, HaHa came in with Vinny. And you and I talked at that point about no Jarrett Williams, no Nick Perry. These guys were highly touted coming out. These guys got some playing time last year before they got hurt. Injuries kind of made them miss a lot of the year last year. Were you surprised that those guys only came out at the end of the game during that, were you surprised they came out kind of more third string and that Vinny and HaHa came out second string?
I don't know if surprise is the right word. I mean, HaHa was one of the top rated safeties in the country. And so you think he's got to have a lot of talent relative to the other guys.
Okay.
What
about Vinny?
Yeah. Vinny may be more of a surprise, but geez, he's a revelation. How do you just not love the kid, for what he gives up on special teams and it looks like potentially, getting near the edge of the rotation in the secondary. What surprises me more than the upside of the two freshmen is Williams and Perry, one plus, 2 years in the system, spring practices, fall practices, camp, they have game time under their experience, under their belts. Where have they kind of fallen off? I don't know.
No, that's true. And because, to your point about Vinny real quick, because, I was thinking, gosh, I'm tired of hearing about him on special teams, and that's great that he's making special teams plays. Well, I got to say for this ball game, and this might answer your question about the Nick Perry thing and the Jarrett Williams thing, the pass interference call on the goal line stands that let them start those four downs over, unfortunately, was Nick Perry. Well, that was the moment that the coaches are going to remember from Nick Perry. The moment you're going to remember from Vinny on that goal line stands is that he came in from nowhere with a shoelace tackle to tackle that guy at the 2 yard line to even set it up for a goal line series. And when I went back and looked at the play by plays, I was shocked. On that last series of plays, Vinny had five tackles on that last series of plays. He had four solos and one assist on one series of plays. So when you talk to me about Jarrett Williams and Nick Perry and making the most of your moment, Vinny's making the most of his moment.
Yeah, that's you're spot on. That productive in such a short window of time and such a critical, and I say critical, I mean it wouldn't have determined the game, but relative to the reserves kind of making a stand and then preserving the shutout, and it's the first shutout we've had in 2 years, that's a critical moment. That's a critical moment in the game, and for him to stand up, so well in that moment, that's impressive. That's just damn impressive.
I will say one thing that, just trying to share some of your pessimism here. When I went back and looked at the numbers, I was, looking, I was like, okay, well, we gave up four sacks and we got no sacks on their quarterback. And I know Saban talks about, it's there's so much more to it. Hurries are, hurries are going to help, you know, dictate quarterbacks and how they play, etc. But when I went back and looked at the stats, man, you know, Courtney Upshaw had three of our five quarterback hurries. He had three of our tackles for loss. He thankfully had a little bit better. He seemed to be a little better after that abdomen injury that he suffered pre-Penn State. But right now, without Courtney, we're not playing in the backfield for the opponent much at all.
We're really not. Now, we did have seven tackles for loss, and so, you know, that was nice to that there was some play on their side of the line of scrimmage. And again, we had a couple of near sack or near picks. We didn't, you know, really land any of them, you know, kind of like the Penn State game. But we're close, and that just tells me we're flying to – it's a little disappointing. You want to get the picks, but, you know, we're flying to the ball, and we're playing the ball in the air well. So
I know, but if you're looking at the game – right? And you and I are saying Alabama played North Texas. Would you think North Texas had four sacks and we had zero?
Well, hey, I started off, you know, down on the offensive line. So, you know, we're just, if you want to circle back to that discussion.
No, I'm just shocked that it played out that way, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm just surprised that to your point about looking ahead, Arkansas is a much better defense. You know, we definitely still have issues on the two lines that this team is not where they need to be yet.
No. And I think, you know, maybe by a long stretch, you know, we need to stabilize on the offensive line very, very quickly. And, you know, and then this next week will be a critical test in getting pressure on the quarterback. You know, we played a lot of nickel and dime this week. That seems to be our go-to move. Nickel and dime, and so we're going to see a lot of that. But we're going to have to somehow manufacture some pressure, or we're going to have a long day against Arkansas.
Well, I'm afraid that we're going to start seeing having to bring six and seven guys because we're not getting it. Because right now we're pretty much, I mean, we haven't dialed up the pressure much, but we've only been sending four or five guys, and we're not getting there with four and five guys.
Well, I'd like to think that we have some blitzes and stunts that we haven't rolled out yet. So I'm gonna hope that's the case.
Anything else on defense that jumps out at you?
You know, just one play. We were, like I said, we lined up in dime a lot. You know, one play that kind of caught my eye is we lined up in dime, and then we had Mosley, you know, follow the running back out who lined up in the slot, and so it was just interesting to me. At one play, we had eight men in coverage, but that was probably more circumstantial than, or I guess seven, but seven men in coverage. That was probably more circumstantial than anything, but it just really speaks to, you know, Mosley's athleticism
and the secondary.
Yeah, and then just, yeah, and our propensity to really lean on the secondary.
Well, and that's what we're going to probably have to do a lot of. If I jump to special teams for a second, I have to kind of ask, what's the deal with Cade Foster and, you know, him and Shelley were sharing these duties last year. And, you know, when it got in the 30, 40-yard range, it was kind of a, you do this one and I'll do the next one. And that was not the case. I mean, Shelley, I'm hoping we see a little Cade Foster. Maybe, you know, we don't see practice, and maybe Shelley had closed that door. But I think that door is reopened with those two misses.
Well, I'm going to be equal opportunity, you know, offense, defense, and now special teams where, you know, I'm seeing some flaws in our games that could hurt us. And two missed field goals, man, we've seen enough Bama games against tough opponents where, you know, missed field goals can cost you the game. And, you know, a couple years ago against Arkansas, it did.
What do you think, though? I mean, we got to speculate here as far as, you know, we haven't seen Cade Foster except on kickoffs. And when you look at the attempts on these field goals, you know, 26 yards, okay, that's Shelley's distance. But then 37, 36, and 42. Foster took some of those last year.
Last year he did. I don't have an answer. I don't know what we're seeing. I've not read anything or, you know, seen any, you know, anything documented on that.
What did you think? We do, there's really not a whole lot more to talk about special teams because, unfortunately, given the, you know, given the fact that North Texas only had one first down in the first half, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot of opportunities. I mean, we only had one kickoff that we could return, and, you know, we had very limited, I guess the one punt was even a fair catch. So there's really not much more we can talk about on special teams.
Yeah, you know, I guess I could be a jerk on the punt. You know, we had, you know, it was a 36-yard punt, but we parked it inside the five. Was that good or lucky?
That was probably lucky.
All right.
Who you giving a game ball to?
Yeah, I'm giving, we'll work back defense. I'm giving a game ball to Will Lowry. Walk on, safety. Comes out a lot in the dime, and so he's not out even in base defense, or he's not out in the nickel. He comes out in dime, and so from his dime safety position, he was a co-leader with Mark Barron with seven tackles. So I'm impressed with his play. He came in his situation, and you know, I guess similar to Vinny, a little different, but he came in and limited a limited role and racked up a lot of tackles.
Well, I've already talked about Vinny, and I could have easily given him my game ball, but I got to throw you a curveball here because when I looked at the stat sheet, nothing really leaped out at me. And so my game ball, in a very sarcastic way, is going to have to be to Jarrell Harris. And it's because Jarrell Harris has taken the opportunity to put something on tape as to why he is so little used and why we run a nickel defense. Just to set it up for everybody, in the second quarter when we thought we had a safety on their highly touted running back Lance Dunbar, Jarrell Harris comes into the backfield untouched. Dunbar's right in front of him. Little Dunbar, who's probably given up 40 pounds, just starts kicking his legs like he's running in place, and Jarrell Harris just whiffs and flails to the ground. Thank goodness Dante Hightower runs in and cleans up his mess. But that play jumped out at me and it said, oh my gosh, this is why you're not a starter.
I just love how you bastardize our mini game balls. Now you've given an anti-game ball.
That's exactly what it is. But nothing jumped out at me, and that jumped out at me. So that's where I got to go with that. Where are you going with offense?
Well, I was going to ask you if, you know, maybe you'll get this one right. But on offense, I'm going with Kenny Bell again this week. He really stepped up. I mean, he led the team in receptions or in receiving yards anyways and had four catches. You know, we kid because we love, and we don't really know the story with DeAndre White, but assuming it is missing classes, I think Kenny Bell would offer a DeAndre White a ride to class anytime.
Well, I have got two game balls to give out. Once again, not in the spirit of how we do things, but Coach McElwain has got to get one of my game balls because I actually think that he called a great game for what you're talking about. He sees practice. He sees the issues he still has on the offensive line, and he's sitting there calling high-percentage passes that can build up the confidence of the quarterback. He's got a quarterback that can zip the ball, give these guys the ball in space so they can do something with it. I just like how he's working with McCarron. The other game ball probably has to go to Eddie Lacy. You and I talked about this during the game, and I really think he's come a long way. I think it's taken a lot for him to get the confidence of the coaches and to correct these fumble problems that he had. But I think that he is showing way more patience. On his touchdown run around the right end, he showed patience to let Vallejos get his block so that he could make that run. I just think he's really stepped up his game a lot.
Now, those are good picks, and you're consistent in being inconsistent in your mini game ball selection. So kudos to you in that regard. We kick off our SEC slate this Saturday. Arkansas Razorbacks come to town. What do you see?
You know, this is going to be a very different game from last year. I mean, last year, you know, we knew that they had the quarterback play. We knew they had the great wide receivers. But yet, we were able to kind of control them in the first half. Their quarterback play has been a surprise to me. You know, they have found somebody that can get the ball to these receivers. Heck, I was shocked that they put up 38 points last Saturday, and their top two wide receivers didn't even play. I mean, they've got some explosiveness on offense that that, you know, from a lot of playmakers. And their defense is definitely getting better. But they still give up a lot of yards. I mean, they gave up over 500 yards to Troy. So I think that our offense is going to have to carry this game. I think our defense is going to give up some points. I think we're probably looking at something like a 31-17 ball game.
All right. You maybe read my mail again. You know, I agree. Tyler Wilson has played very well this year. I mean, I kind of looked at his numbers. He's 59 for 86, so he's completing more than 68% of his passes. You know, and in just a couple of games, he has almost 1,000 yards and 5 touchdowns. I think our defensive backfield struggled against Arkansas some last year. I think they'll struggle less this year. I think that's really the strength of our team, and we're going to lean on them heavily this week. I think we do solidify some things on the offensive line, and I think we do manage to put some points on the board. I'm looking at a 24-17 style ball game.
Okay, so a little bit closer then.
A little bit closer.
Well, I hope I'm right and you're wrong.
Well, I hope so. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. And hey, by the way, we're putting together an email mailing list. So if you want to reach out to us at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com, drop us your email. We'll be sure to include you on our future email mailing list. Thanks. Have a great day and roll tide. Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Young men can play it against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
All right.